On our broadcast tonight, plot to attack the U.S. Capitol, inspired by ISIS, foiled by the feds in an undercover operation. Chilling new images from inside the hostage siege in Paris, as Al-Qaeda says it was behind the massacre at that magazine that hit newsstands again today. Scare in space, American astronauts scramble to safety in the middle of the night. Measles outbreak, the biggest in years, and traced back to Disneyland. Tonight, the scramble to track down those who may have been exposed. And a cliffhanger. We've all been watching two men with the summit in their sights. We're there live tonight in Yosemite. Nightly news begins now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
Good evening. The feds say they were on to it early, but tonight they've announced they've stopped a plan apparently inspired by ISIS to attack the U.S. Capitol and those inside it. It's an example, they say, of the kind of lone wolf attack that can get its inspiration from people and movements overseas. We begin tonight with late details from our justice correspondent, Pete Williams, in our D.C. newsroom. Pete, good evening.
Brian, good evening. U.S. officials say this is precisely what they worry about most. Someone in the U.S. becoming inspired by terrorist propaganda to carry out attacks here at home.
The FBI says 20-year-old Christopher Lee Cornell of Green Township, Ohio, wanted to set off pipe bombs at the U.S. Capitol and shoot people as they fled. Investigators say he came to their attention last August when he posted pro-ISIS messages on Twitter using an alias, Raheel Maras Ubeda. Court documents say he discussed his plans with a man he thought was sympathetic, but who turned out to be working undercover for the FBI. According to investigators, Cornell said that former al-Qaeda figure Anwar al-Awlaki and others had expressed the view that this kind of jihad was the right thing to do. Cornell was arrested earlier today after he bought two assault-type rifles like this and 600 rounds of ammunition.
Spent at least enough time with these particular officers to know that I was in good hands. They knew what they were doing, and they exuded a lot of confidence.
Federal officials insist there was never any danger because the man was under close surveillance for months. They say he never built any pipe bombs and didn't even buy the components for them. Brian?
Pete Williams starting us off from our Washington newsroom tonight. Pete, thanks. Word out of Washington tonight, a major shakeup on the way in the U.S. Secret Service. The agency is removing four high-level officials from their posts after a series of embarrassing incidents and dangerous lapses. Among the men and women charged with protecting the highest office in the land. We get our report tonight from our White House correspondent, Kristen Welker.
It is a major overhaul for an agency in crisis. Four assistant directors are being tossed out of their current posts and reassigned. Acting Director Joe Clancy saying in a statement, change is necessary to gain a fresh perspective on how we conduct business. Those being replaced come from every corner of the department. Dale Papillo with Protective Operations, Paul Morrissey, Investigations, Jane Murphy, Governmental and Public Affairs, and Mark Capanzi, a top official in technology. In an interview with Brian last month, Clancy signaled big changes.
We do have zero tolerance with misconduct, and we've got training in place. We've got an integrity board in place.
The agency is trying to come back from a series of security lapses, among them agents getting caught with prostitutes during an official presidential trip to Cartagena, Colombia in 2012, a fence jumper making it all the way inside the White House late last year.
This may be a really critical moment for members of the rank and file who have been clamoring for change in the leadership.
Brian, each of the four reassigned employees has more than 30 years of service. No word on their new assignments. All of this comes after an independent report described a culture of low morale and poor leadership at the Secret Service. Brian.
Kristen Welker on the White House North Lawn tonight. Kristen, thanks. Al, a tense day in space for the astronauts on board the International Space Station and for mission control here on the ground at NASA. The crew, two Americans, one Italian, three Russians, were forced to take refuge and safety in the Russian side of the space station as onboard alarms warned of a possible toxic leak on board in the section normally occupied by the American astronauts. We get details tonight from NBC's Tom Costello.
Floating 250 miles above the Earth, space station astronauts spent much of the day wearing emergency oxygen masks, testing the air, after early morning alarm bells warned of a possible ammonia leak in the cooling system on the American side. The order from Mission Control, don the masks, get to the Russian side, and close the hatch.
Bottom line is, we've got all the experts that have come in now. Everybody's poring over the data. We've got all the smart folks taking a look at it.
An ammonia or toxic leak, rapid decompression, fire or smoke event are among the most serious emergencies on the space station. Any one could force the crew to abandon the station in a Russian Soyuz capsule.
These kinds of emergencies start with protecting the crew, then trying to deal with the issue, and then if in the end we can't deal with the issue, some of them can result in evacuating the station.
The six crew members were supposed to spend the day unloading a resupply spaceship launched by SpaceX. But as they hunkered down in the Russian section, Mission Control became more convinced it may have been a false alarm caused by a bad computer card.
There is no data at the moment suggesting that there was, in fact, a real ammonia leak.
Veteran astronaut Scott Kelly is preparing to spend a year on the station with Russian cosmonauts.
Especially with the crew members, the cosmonauts, we're great friends. We have to work together. We have to rely on each other, literally for our own lives.
After running air quality tests all day, Mission Control gave the all clear to the astronauts just after 3 p.m. Eastern time. Tonight, the entire station, which operates on Greenwich Mean Time, 5 hours ahead of New York, it has all resumed normal operations. Brian?
Tom Costello in the safety of Washington, D.C. tonight. Tom, thanks. Over the better part of these last 3 weeks, we have witnessed a test of human skill and endurance, really unlike any other, on a mountain unlike any other. And tonight, we have witnessed the culmination of all of it. Two men have completed what's been roundly described as the most difficult free climb in the world. NBC's Miguel Almaguer is right there at the very top of El Capitan in Yosemite for us tonight. Miguel, good evening.
Thank you. Brian, good evening. This is the moment that has been so many years in the making. We were here live when Tommy Caldwell and Kevin Jorgensen came up the mountain, were greeted after climbing 3,000 feet up El Capitan. They gave their wives hugs. They popped champagne. They are still hugging family at this moment. My colleague Hallie Jackson has been following their journey for the last several weeks.
It's a moment 7 years in the making, but 19 days ago, no one knew if it would happen.
Right as we were
after Tommy Caldwell and Kevin Jorgensen started the hardest free climb in the world. Their shredded fingertips gripping granite flakes as thin as dimes, inching up a section at a time. One slip means starting over. Ropes there only to catch them, not to help them. Between climbs, life suspended on the Dawn Wall, each night sleeping thousands of feet above the valley floor.
Think about everything you've done in the last 2.5 weeks. Every time you went to the store, every time you had dinner, they were on that cliff.
Yes. As momentum builds, the meadow below fills with onlookers, eager to learn more about the two friends, Jorgensen's childhood climbing competitions, Caldwell's escape after being kidnapped during a climb in Kyrgyzstan, and the freak accident that left him with 9 fingers in a sport where sometimes even 10 aren't enough.
All of these hardships that he's been through, they've all led up to this moment, to him being able to look at the Dawn Wall, say, this looks impossible, but I'm going to try it anyways.
Oh, you gotta go.
From a distance, the climbers' families feel each triumph and the tension.
It's just like, oh, your heart just drops when you're, because you know how bad he wants to do it. But, man, talk about tenacious.
Jorgensen slipped again and again until finally he didn't.
And I couldn't be happier.
That's when they seem unstoppable.
This is a view that I'll always remember.
Two friends climbing into history, proving the impossible may not be.
The folks up top could probably hear the cheers of joy from the meadow down below, 3,000 feet beneath them. And while there is a sense of elation, it's also bittersweet. As Tommy Caldwell's mother told me, this is the realization of a dream, but also the end of one. Brian?
Hallie Jackson in the meadow at the base of El Capitan. Miguel Almaguer before that at the summit. Miguel might have gotten the better part of this deal. We'll take a break, and still ahead for us tonight, we'll go back to Miguel Almaguer at the summit, and we'll show you how we managed to beat the climbers to the top in just one day. Here's a broad hint. There is a back way, but it's still a pretty tough climb. First, up next, a major outbreak of measles traced back to Disneyland and spreading as families return home, a scramble to find everyone who may have been exposed. We don't hear much about it because outbreaks are few and far between, but measles has been slowly making a big comeback. 2014 was the worst year since 2000 for measles nationwide, tripled the number of cases over the year before. And it appears a new outbreak may have started as a destination known better to millions as the happiest place on earth. We get our report tonight from our chief medical editor, Dr. Nancy Snyderman.
Take a person infected with measles combined with thousands of Disneyland tourists, and you have the recipe for the worst measles outbreak in California in 15 years. Doctors are scrambling to get ahead of this.
Disneyland is the perfect situation because lots of people, lots of children.
It's a serious yet preventable disease that has now spread beyond California, with reports of 26 ill people in Utah, Colorado, and Washington State.
It can lead to blindness. It can lead to encephalitis, which is an infection of the brain.
In its early stages, measles may be mistaken for a bad cold. Symptoms include fever, dry cough, runny nose, red watery eyes, and a signature rash. People can spread measles up to 4 days before the rash even appears. A significant number of people in this outbreak were not vaccinated, either opting out or too young to get a shot. In Long Beach, California, one infected patient went to multiple stores. This gym posted a sign about the measles outbreak, prompting questions from customers.
Do we need to get in and get another booster? Do we don't need to worry about it because we've already had the measles? So we called our doctor first.
A child gets the first dose of measles vaccine at 12 to 16 months of age, and then the second one between 4 to 6 years. And right now, even adults are considered candidates for getting a booster. This one, I think, is going to take days, if not weeks, to really figure out the entire outbreak.
This has received our attention. Nancy, thank you,
as
always.
Ryan.
We're back in a moment with a high-speed chase on the water that got way too close for comfort. All of it caught on camera. Look at the size of this storm. That's the U.S. on the left. This is a single weather front. It stretches all the way from the lower 48 all the way across the Atlantic to Europe and beyond. Upper-level winds have been incredibly strong across the ocean this winter. Recent passenger flights to London reported being carried along at speeds that fell just shy of the sound barrier. Passengers got to London from New York an hour early. One British Airways pilot said it was like surfing on the jet stream all the way across the Atlantic. Scientists have confirmed most of us have something they call cold empathy. It means we actually feel colder when we're just looking at someone who is shivering and obviously cold. And it's a powerful sensation. Volunteers who watched video of strangers putting their hands into cold water actually witnessed their own body temperatures drop as a result. The researchers add that while we feel the cold of others, it doesn't work the other way around for warmth. Box office revenues were down over 20% this past summer from last summer. With the national average ticket price now at $8, over half of moviegoers told pollsters recently they're increasingly staying away because going to the movies has simply become too expensive. Finally, the driver of a speedboat in a national park in Zambia had reason to believe there was something in their wake in the water just behind the boat. Sure enough, it was a hippo the size of a Volkswagen bus, the most dangerous mammal in all of Africa, just feet from the stern till they sped up and got out of there. When we come back, we'll return live to Miguel Almaguer, 3,000 feet up at the summit of El Capitan. Celebration just underway in Yosemite. Earlier on in our broadcast tonight, we brought you an incredible moment as those two mountain climbers reached the peak of human achievement and the summit of Yosemite's El Capitan. It took them 19 days by hand. Our team made it up to the top in a single day. They made the journey the way a lot of hikers and tourists do, which is they went the back way, which is not without its challenges, we should hasten to add. We get our report tonight from NBC's Miguel Almaguer.
Our hike to the summit began at 5 a.m. along a treacherous trail through the backcountry. 8 miles and 10 hours to the top of El Capitan.
It's pretty rocky, pretty steep. You can see the terrain we're dealing with here. It's also quite breathtaking. There's the falls right there, if you can see it. Iced over, shot of the valley, and our crew behind us who's working their way up this hill.
The Yosemite Falls Trail is popular for thousands of hikers each year. The view of the waterfall, North America's highest at roughly 2,400 feet, is spectacular. We're accompanied by guides, but once here, most hikers turn back.
It looks intimidating. That's the top of the wall we're trying to reach, 3,000 feet up. We've come a long way from this valley floor. It's cold up here, but that's good for hiking weather. We've reached a mile marker here. We got about 4.5 miles to go. Still quite a distance to cover.
Oh,
a good stretch of the trail is actually covered in snow. That's where we've reached. It slowed us down quite a bit. It's really slippery. It's like ice, literally.
There are 100 trails up to El Capitan. It was first summited in 1958. For those who make it to the top, the reward is pure beauty, the view of a lifetime.
For those who reach the summit, whether it was up that sheer granite wall or around the back trails like us, there is pure joy and celebration going on right now atop here. And there is word tonight that the president may call these two climbers. Brian.
Well done up there. Miguel Almaguer at the summit of El Capitan in Yosemite. From New York, that's going to be our broadcast for this Wednesday night. Thank you for being here with us. I'm Brian Williams. We, of course, hope to see you right back here tomorrow evening. Good night.